There we go.
I see the only thing standing between you and lunch is this shear. So it's always a tough spot to be in. Nevertheless, thank you all for being here and giving me the opportunity to learn together. So the topic this morning that I chose is the contemporary challenge of prayer, insights from the sugya of women and prayer. It's a very fascinating sugya by itself, and it has a really interesting application to what I'm calling the contemporary challenge of prayer. See, the way I look at it, and I've been thinking about this for many years, is that tefillah is something that is so much a part of our life as Jews. You know, there are 613 mitzvot. There's so many aspects of being Jewish and living a Jewish life, but tefillah seems to be constant. Three times a day, we're always going to shul, Shabbos, Yontif. It surrounds our lives. It's something that we're so busy with so much of the time. Yet, it is something that I'm going to go out on a limb and say for many of us, certainly for myself and other people that I know, it's challenging much of the time. It's something that's very challenging, and I would argue, and we'll get back to this later, is that particularly in this point in history, for our generation, it's particularly challenging. So here it is, something we're doing so much of, and yet something that we have so much difficulty with. Perhaps we can get some insight from this learning that we'll do this morning into understanding the nature of that problem, and which hopefully will help us then also understand a way out of it, at least a direction. Let me just, by way of introduction, ask you, throw it out to the tzibur here, why do we feel, some ideas, why do we feel that tefillah is a challenge? What's challenging about it? Yes?
Because I think people feel that they can do it by themselves in private.
Uh-huh.
In a time of
no need for going to shul necessarily. Okay.
We don't see any concrete being in front of us receiving our prayers or having a dialogue with us. It seems like a monologue.
It's very abstract. Right? It's davening to Hashem, but it's very different than talking to my friend who I see right in front of me.
I think it's easy to get distracted. It's long, and you remember the concepts of what you're saying in each paragraph, but you get off while you're on
right.
the same
and
words
it's in,
over
it's interesting. Again. Historically, tefillah has really grown. It started off, it's not our topic today, but it started off as being very small text, and then over the years it's grown, and now it's so long, maybe that makes it easier to harder to sustain. Yes, in the back?
Kavanah. Mm.
Yeah.
When I can pay attention enough to know what the words are saying,
yeah.
The same thing all the time.
Right.
And personally, it's like, it feels so selfish. Why should God be listening to
me? Uh-huh. It's fascinating. Yes, Rav Soloveitchik speaks a lot about that. And we'll touch on that a little bit, yeah.
I think sometimes in shul, when you're davening, it's a race just to keep up. So how can there be
right.
real kavanah?
You know, and that's the challenge between davening on one's own at home, let's say, or davening in shul. Each one poses, I would say, different challenges. Let me flip the question and say, what are the times in our lives, and we could all think about this, that we found it's a little bit easier to daven, or we've connected more, or it's more natural? You know, what are those times? You don't have to be necessarily specific, but just, you know.
When you need something, when you feel...
when you feel you really need something.
Israel, perhaps, and things are going on in Israel, and right. boy, those tefillos are right. spot on.
When we really need something.
Intense gratitude. Yes.
Need something, flip side, intense gratitude, intense appreciation for some wonderful thing that has happened.
I think really any kind of strong emotion.
Strong emotion. So maybe the times that we're having difficulty davening is because we lack that, right? So this is really the kernel of the idea that we're going to touch on, and we're going to see how these sources are going to help us reflect on it. So the source sheets you have in front of you each have numbers on the bottom, and each source is numbered. It's a lot of Hebrew. I do apologize for not having it translated, but no need to worry. Everything will be explained and translated. So even if you know it's not as easy to follow along the sources, it will all be explained. Okay, so here we have a sugya in Brachot. It starts with a Gemara, as most of these things do. We start with a Gemara in Brachot, Daf Kaf Amud Aleph. It's actually a Mishnah. And the Mishnah outlines five mitzvot. The Mishnah says, Nashim vavadim v'ktanim, p'turim mikriyat shema min atfilin, v'chayavim b'tfilah v'mezuzah b'rbekat hamazon. Source number one. Women, and we're not going to go into the details here of the fact that women are included also with servants and with minors. it has to do with the level of obligation, but it's not our topic today. Women, servants, and the minors are turim, are exempt from the mitzvot of Kriyat Shema and Tefillin, but they're obligated in the mitzvah of tefillah, mezuzah, and benching. So it's five mitzvot. Anyone familiar with a rule that has to do with women's obligation in mitzvot? I'm sure if you've come to these kind of shiurim, you've heard it. What's the rule? Time-bound mitzvot. What's the phrase in Hebrew? Mitzvot aseh, positive mitzvot, right, that are time-bound. Because we know the rule is negative mitzvot, or lo taseh, it doesn't matter if it's time-bound, right? Women are obligated in all those mitzvot the same way as men do. And people think it's this huge exemption. It happens to be, if you actually count up the number of mitzvot, maybe a little more than 10. So you're not talking about that many mitzvot in this category in the end of the day, because there are so many exceptions actually to the category, like Kiddush on Shabbos, many other exceptions to the category. So in the end of the day, there's a small group of mitzvot from which women are exempt. Does this rule help us understand the Mishnah? Let's take a look. Now, they're pturim, they're exempt from Kriyat Shema and Tefillin. Are those positive time-bound mitzvot? That's mitzvah aseh shas magrama? Okay, it seems like they are. And chayavim b'tefillah, mezuzah, and berakat hamazon, are those not in that category?
Mostly.
What about tefillah? What's difficult about tefillah? There is why? There are times, right?
If you're going to say the tefillah is the replacement for the korbanot, then they're subject to the same time frames as the korbanot.
Right. The excellence. So as you're referring to another Gemara in Brachot, right, that says tefillah keneged tmidim tiknum, that it's parallel to the korbanot, and the set times for the korbanot and set times for the tefillot. So tefillah maybe is a little bit of a challenge there. Mezuzah is not time bound, it's always on our door. Benching, is it time bound?
Well,
yeah. Let's see if we have a Talmudic answer here.
If you had time to eat, you had time to bench.
That's true. You have to bench after you eat, right? And within a certain time frame. So why would that not be time bound?
Because you didn't have to eat at 9 o'clock, you could eat at 1:30.
Right, because it depends on the time that you eat. It doesn't depend on a calendar time or on a time of day per se. Not an objective time. It's subjective. So that's why that's not. So tefillah is a little bit of a question mark. Okay. And indeed, that's exactly what Rashi and the commentaries point out, that this Mishnah is based on this rule, this principle, mitzvah sheish says man grama, and it's an example, it's an application of that rule. Rashi says, in the source 2, Nashim avadim v'ktayim p'tur mikriyat shema. I'm just going to read it briefly because we just said it. Shehi mitzvah aseh shas man grama. Kriyat shema is time-bound mitzvah. You have to say it in the morning a certain time, in the night at a certain time. And we know from the Gemara in Kiddushin, it's not our topic, that we don't have in front of us, but the Gemara in Chavtet in Kiddushin spells that specifically. This rule of Nashim p'turot mitzvah aseh shas man grama. And what about tefillin? It's also time-bound. Because we hold Laila v'Shabbat loves on tefillin. We don't wear tefillin at night. We don't wear tefillin on Shabbat. And therefore, it's also time-bound. And that's why women are exempt from tefillin. So it's an application of the general rule. The Gemara says, though, in Source 3, when the Gemara starts to attack the Mishnah, the Gemara says, Kriyat Shema, Pshita. Kriyat Shema, this is obvious. So what's the Gemara's question here? Kriyat Shema, this is obvious. The Gemara says, Mitzvah seishas man gromahu. After all, Kriyat Shema is obviously, it's a time-bound positive commandment, and we know the rule, all time-bound positive commandments, Nashim P'turot. So what's the problem with the Mishnah here? Is it going against something that we... It's in line with the rule, right? So what problem does the Gemara have? What does this word Pshita mean? Yeah.
It's saying, why does this need to be mentioned explicitly if you already have a rule?
We already know it. So it's back to this old rule that in the Chumash especially, but even in Gemara and Mishnah, we don't really like redundancy. You know, the whole Mishnah, even though it seems long, it's still pretty concise, right? Certainly verses in the Torah are so concise. So we don't expect there to be redundancy. If there is a redundancy, it's there for a reason. So this is something we know already from the Gemara and Kiddushin. Why then does the Mishnah and Brachot need to repeat it and give us these examples? Why doesn't it give us more examples? Shofar, women are exempt. It's man grama. Yeah. So obviously it's coming to teach us something. It gives five mitzvot and gives specific examples. it's a rule that we know already. So whenever you have this, the Gemara will always ask, this is obvious, we know it already, what's it coming to teach us? And in each case, the Gemara goes on, I just want to show you the pattern, truthfully, and then the goal here is to get to tefillah. So the Kriyat Shema, the Gemara asks that question, and then the Gemara says, the end of that first line, Mahu Tetema, you might have thought, Hov Itba Malchut Shamayim, Kamash Malon. You might have thought Kriyat Shema would be an exception to the rule. We pointed out earlier there are a number of exceptions, right? Like Kiddush on Shabbos, it's time-bound, women are still obligated. So maybe Kriyat Shema would have been an exception as well. Why? Because it's all Malchut Shamayim, it's so important. No, Kamash Malon, the mission is teaching us they're still exempt, it's still part of the regular rule. What about Tefillin? Also, Pshita, it's obvious. We know it's part of the regular rule. Once again, you might have thought it's an exception. Because in the parsha of Shema, Tefillin and Mezuzah come together. There's a hekesh, there's a comparison. So just like they're obligated in Mezuzah, you might have thought they're obligated in Tefillin. Kamash Malon, that's why our Mishnah is teaching us Tefillin, to teach us it's not one of the exceptions. I'm skipping Tefillah for now. Uve Mezuzah. Again, Pshita, it's obvious, of course they should be obligated in mezuzah. If a woman's living in a house, of course she needs a mezuzah. Ma'al detema hovit kisha talmud Torah. You might have thought because in the parsha of Shema, mezuzah is written next to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And we know women are exempt from the technical mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It's a whole separate shiur. I think it's a little bit misleading because I think in many ways they are obligated in Talmud Torah, but in this technical level, the Gemara says they're not. Kamash Malon, also, this is not one of the exceptions, and they are obligated. And same thing with benching. What you guys said before, Pshita, it's obvious, of course they're obligated in benching. No, you would have thought that you basically eat at certain times of the day, you bench at certain times of the day, maybe it's man grama. The answer is, it's not. So each one of these things, the Gemara goes and approaches it the same way. Isn't it obvious? It's not so obvious because I might have thought it would be an exception. Let's take a look at what the Gemara says about tefillah. It's a little bit of a confusing line, but don't worry, we're going to explain it. It's the 4th line of the source 3. V'chayavim b'tefillah. So here the Mishnah said women are obligated in tefillah. Why? Derachamei ninhu. Because tefillah is essentially asking for mercy. Mahu detema, I might have thought, hol aksibba, since it says in Tehillim, erev avokar v'tzaharayim, we daven 3 times a day. Kimitzvah raseish as my gramadami. I would have thought it's like a time-bound positive mitzvah. Kamash malon, it is not. Kamash malon, women are obligated. So this language we have is a subject of debate amongst Rashi, the Bach, Tosfot, all the commentaries. They say that the language, the text of the Gemara, is sort of garbled and confused and mishubash. So Rashi has one girsa, and we're going to see the Bach and the Bach as well, and Tosfot has another girsa. And each girsa is going to give us a different understanding of what this Gemara is saying and how it fits it. So Rashi says, source 4, V'chayavim b'tfilah. Notice Rashi only quotes the beginning, the tefillah rachamehi. Why are women obligated in tefillah? Because tefillah is asking for mercy, and everyone needs that, men and women alike. Umidrabananhi, that's an important word here. And tefillah is rabbinic in nature. We're gonna see more about that. V'tiknuaf l'nashim elchino ketanim. And the rabbis, when they institute something, they have freedom to set the parameters. And the rabbis institute it in such a way that women and even minors are obligated in the sense of educating them, the ketanim. And then Rashi says again, Hachi Garsinan, this is the right text of the Gemara, the tefillah rachamei ninhu, period. That's where it ends. V'lo garas pshita dehalav doraitahi. And Rashi does not go raise, he says the text that seems to appear here, that it's, isn't it obvious women should be obligated in tefillah? Rashi says, we don't have that. That's an incorrect girsa here. Why? Because it's not biblical. What's Rashi talking about? So this is like the most technical part of the shiur. So just bear with me and we'll be through this in a few minutes. Notice how the pattern was. Every other mitzvah, it had that same pattern, right? Isn't it obvious? Pshita? No, it's really not so obvious. Rashi says, the Gemara doesn't really say that. Even though part of the Gemara says that, that is somehow an errant version of the text. That's not the actual text. The text ends after the words Rachamei Ninu. Why? Because according to Rashi, the mitzvah of davening is rabbinic. How could you say it's a mitzvah d'aseh? The whole phrase, mitzvah d'aseh shazman grama, means it's a positive commandment. Rashi says, you can't say that for tefillah. Tefillah is rabbinic. So let's delete that part of the text and only have the words, because tefillah is asking for mercy, and rabbis instituted it so that women are obligated as well, because everyone needs mercy. Similarly, like rabbinic mitzvah, for example, Hanukkah candles, right? It's a rabbinic mitzvah, and they institute it in such a way that women are obligated, and we know the rule there, right? Because it's afein hayu b'otel hanes. So there are many examples of this, that when the rabbis institute something, they set the parameters to it. That's Rashi, and the Bach agrees with that. We don't have to read it inside. Tosfot, however, say, b'tfilah, number 6, pshita, isn't it obvious women are obligated in tfilah? I would have thought, because of the pasuk in Tehillim that reminds us that it's davening's three times a day, I would have thought we treat it as a positive time-bound mitzvah and women should be exempt. Kamash Malan, they're not. Derachme Ninhu. And actually, the notes on the Tosos actually delete the Derachme Ninhu, because you don't need it, according to him. The Rashi lo garas le shrei tefila derabbanani my mitzvah ase shaychi be. But Rashi doesn't quote this part of the text, because according to Rashi it's derabbanan, and what mitzvah ase would we have if it's derabbanan? So let's skip ahead to source 7 and let's just kind of clarify this so we can get understanding of what's going on. This is my little summary here. Let's read it in a clean version. Rashi, according to Rashi, the Gemara reads this 7 aleph bechayvin b'tefila. Derachame ninu, period. According to Tosfot, has it read? Bitfila pshita. Isn't it obvious? Of course they're obligated in davening. You might have thought it's like a zman grama. Kamash Lon Mishnah is teaching you it's not. So according to which opinion does the text flow with the rest of the pattern of the text? Does the text of Tosfot or the text of Rashi flow with the rest of that Gemara? Tosfot, right? It's the same pattern, right? They all have. According to Rashi, though, it's an exception. According to Rashi, it does not exactly fit, but that's okay. No one says it has to exactly fit the pattern, but one could see how the whole Gemara got confused here over the ages and as it was being copied. What do the later commentaries say? So if you take a look, the Rif, in the back of the Gemara, is very early Rishon, late Gaon. It actually precedes Rashi and Tosos. He says in the third line, "Tefilo mezuzah berkanamazon mitzvah asei shazman grama." I'm sorry, mitzvah asei shelo azman grama. I'm sorry, shelo azman grama nashim chayavot. So he clearly comes down like the side of Tosfot that davening is mitzvah asei. So bottom line here, before we get to the Rambam and the next part of the Shir, let's just kind of summarize. We have a Gemara that quotes a Mishnah. I'm sorry, we have a Mishnah that lays out 5 mitzvot, one of them being davening, that's our focus. Some of them women are obligated, some of them they're not. It seems to go according to the general rule of positive time-bound mitzvot, women being obligated, if it's not time-bound, women being exempt, if it's not time-bound, women are obligated. And the Gemara endeavors to understand why each one needed to be mentioned. And then we saw a variant of the text between Rashi and Tosfot and the Bach and the Rif. Basically, 2 ultimate versions, and what it seems to hinge on is whether or not you say davening is a mitzvah d'oraita or not. And that's going to become very important. Is davening a mitzvah d'oraita? Is it biblical or is it rabbinic? So we have like 2 sugyot here. We have this sugya of women's obligation in davening, and we have another issue of is davening rabbinic or biblical? And we're going to see that the two have a really strong impact on each other. But at the end of the day, let me ask you, is there any dispute about women's obligation in davening? Based on everything we saw, is there any debate about that? No, it's very clearly stated in the Mishnah, women are obligated in davening. So perhaps this whole dispute is really something like a side issue and really bears no application to the issue of women's obligation in davening. It would seem that way, but we're going to see as we move on that that's not the case. That depending on which approach you go with, the Rashi or the Tosfot, the biblical or the rabbinic, is going to have actually a very significant impact on the practical level, we'll see them soon, about women's obligation in tefillah. Okay, any questions up to this point before we move on? Because I don't want to lose people. We'll repeat ourselves many times, but yeah.
Is the original reason that women aren't obligated to use Bodhisattva as grandma because they're busy with family, etc.? Is that
okay? So that's a great question. The Gemara in Kiddushin, in discussing it, does not give a reason. The Gemara gives a textual proof, and there's actually three, four different versions of it. It's like over 2 pages of Gemara, and there's three, four different opinions as to what exactly that proof is. It gets very technical, comparing to the mitzvah of going up to Yerushalayim, comparing to this, which mitzvah serve as the paradigm. Okay, but the Gemara never gives a logical reason. So some of the comments, some of the Rishonim do, and that is one opinion in some of the Rishonim. And, you know, it's one of those things where everyone could kind of think of their own opinion of what works for them, but the Gemara doesn't actually give a definitive reason and say this is why. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so let's jump in now into the Rambam, and this is great. So the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvah, Rambam wrote a number of, obviously one of the greatest Rishonim, very, very prolific. And when he was a teenager, he started to write the Sefer HaMitzvah. I think he was 19 when he started to write it. It's one of his earliest works. And he basically wrote a book outlining all the mitzvot in the Torah. And his fifth mitzvah, let's see what he writes. A mitzvah chamishit, source 9. He had tzivui shenitztaveinu la'avdo yitaleh. It's the mitzvah to worship and to serve Hashem. And his mitzvah is repeated many times in the Torah. Va'avadtem et Hashem Elokeichem, oto tavodu, oto tavod, la'avdo. It's repeated many, many verses. And then the Rambam says, even though, according to my perspective, this is a generalization, it's a very general principle. We should serve Hashem. That's a Jew's purpose in the world, is to serve Hashem. It's not telling you any specific action. Harei Yeshbo, towards the end of the paragraph, Harei Yeshbo, Yichud, there is something specific that it's commanding us, and that is the Tzivui on Tzfilah. So when it says to serve Hashem, in addition to being a general principle in Judaism of serving Hashem, it's also a specific commandment to serve Hashem through davening. And he quotes the Sifri, the Midrash Halacha, who says, Lavdo Zo Tzfilah. And we'll see more about this in a few moments. So according to the Rambam, very clearly, what would you say? Is the Rambam saying, is tefillah a mitzvah d'oraita or mitzvah d'rabanan? Mitzvah d'oraita. It's one of the 613. It's the fifth mitzvah in the Torah. It's clearly a mitzvah d'oraita. Now what does this mean? Let's see source 10 in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam's much later work, where he goes into much more detail about essentially all the halachot in the entire corpus of halacha. So he has a section called Hilchot Tefillah, chapter 1, verse halacha 1, paragraph 1. The Rambam gives us a little more detail. Mitzvah aseh, it's a positive commandment, lipala b'chol yom, to daven every day. Shneimar again, v'avadetem et Hashem Elokeichem. P'yash lomdu she'avoda zohi tefillah. What does it mean to worship Hashem, to serve Hashem? It means to pray to Him. Lovda b'chol vavchem, amru chachamim, ezuhi avoda she'belev. How do you serve Hashem with your heart? That's through davening. Now, fourth line. V'ein minyan ha-tfilot min ha-Torah. But the number of tfilot that we say every day, that's not from the Torah. V'lo mishneh, and the text of the tfilah is not from the Torah. So, the whole siddur and everything it says in there, that's not from the Torah. V'ein la-tfilot zman kavua min ha-Torah. And there's no set time. You know, I was looking this morning, when's my kriyat shema, when's my tfilah? You know, I was looking on my phone. It goes, all of that, that's not from the Torah. When shkia, you know, when can we daven ma'ariv? Ufikach nashim v'avadim chayam b'tfilah. And that's why women are obligated in tefillah. Because the mitzvah say that shelo hazman grama. So mitzvah tefillah, we said before, maybe it's time bound, right? There's certain times. Rambam says, no, there's no times. That's why it's purely, it's not time bound at all. And that's why women are obligated. So, what's he talking about? What do you mean? What, don't we have certain times?
It feels like tefillah is two separate things. Tefillah, which kind of, maybe we're going back to the debate about aseh tefillah chakeva, and the discussion about women is a collateral issue that comes up as we're talking about two separate things. One is the fact that we daven, not because we're obligated, but because we're people who daven. The other is the regimen and the routine of specific prayer.
Right.
And so if we talk about the routine of prayer, then we talk about whether or not women are obligated. But if we talk about we daven because we daven, and not because of whether we're obligated, then we're back to the question about asei tefillah kakeva, right? If it's no, you should only daven when you're stirred to daven.
Right.
No, you should only daven when it's the right time.
So exactly. We're going to see that the Rambam is going to walk us through the historical progression of how this developed. So let's see halacha bit. Elachia mitzvah zo. So what is the mitzvah of davening then? If it's no set time, no set text. Elachia mitzvah zo kachu. She adam et palom et chanim b'chol yom. Person should be davening and beseeching Hashem every day. So there is a concept. It's not just whenever you want. It is actually at least once a day, it sounds like. Umagid shvachol shel kash baruch hu. And someone was saying earlier about gratitude, praising Hashem. And then asking for his or her needs. And then thanking and praising Hashem for all the good that He's given us. This should sound familiar, by the way. This is the structure of the Amidah, right? It's the pattern. Praise, bakasha, and hoda'ah. So it's fascinating. According to the Rambam, this tripart structure is biblical in nature. And it's learned actually from the Psukim of Moshe. Where the way Moshe davens in Parshat Vetchanan, that is where this is learned from. So even though the actual words we say are not biblical according to the Rambam, but the fact that your davening has to have those three parts, praise, request, and thanks, that is biblical. Okay. Kol echad kefi kocho, but every person according to his or her ability. So prayer is very personalized. It's very subjective. Halacha Gimel. Im hayar ragil, if you're someone who's very good at davening, marbe betchina vakasha, so you daven a lot. Im hayar aral svatayim, you have difficulty expressing yourself, medaber kefi yochlo, v'chol eit sheyirtza, so you could daven to the best of your ability. V'chein minyan atfilo, the amount of times you daven, kol achad kefi yocholto, as best as you can. Yesh mishpal pamachat, someone's going to daven once a day. Yesh mishpal pamim harbe, someone's going to daven many times a day. But whenever you daven, remember, you're davening nochach ha-mikdash, you have to always face east, in our case, where we live, meaning you have to face the mikdash, v'chol makom she'iyah, if you're in the Galil, you're facing south, right? V'chein hayadavar tamid mimoshe rabbeinu ad Ezra. And this is how it was until the time of Ezra ha-sofer, the beginning of Bayit Sheni. I took out, there's like 10 more halachot. Feel free to take a look inside, by the way. It's just hilchot tefillah. It's very, Rambam, the beautiful thing about the Rambam is it's really clear, crystal clear Hebrew. So it's pretty straightforward. You could take a look and read the rest of it, but I'll summarize it for you. After Ezra, they came from Babel, their Hebrew wasn't so good anymore, they didn't know how to daven anymore, so they started to institute the set times, the set text, and all of the above. So all of those more structured aspects of the davening, those are, according to the Rambam, rabbinic. So there's two aspects of davening. There's biblical, and there's rabbinic. There's the biblical mitzvah to daven once a day, worship Hashem in any way that you can to the best of your ability. And then there's what developed over time is the rabbinic aspect, the structured form. You have to have daven shachris, you have to have mincha, you have to have mar, patterned off the karbonot, perhaps, patterned off of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, which according to this time, according to the Rambam, up until that point wasn't considered as obligatory, it was more just a paradigm. And then they started to set brachot. They said, you know what, people don't know what to daven for. They have trouble thinking of what to daven for. We need to help them, we need to give them a menu. They put together the Shemona Esrei brachot, and then afterwards they added Tehillim to the Siddur, we need to lead up to it. And all those things are there to assist us in finding the words, in making the time for it, etc. Because without that, it wasn't happening anymore. It was falling by the wayside. So that's the Rambam in terms of how he understands davening. And this has very important applications to the idea of women in davening and the idea of this contemporary challenge of tefillah, which we'll see in one moment. But first we have to see the Rambam. Any questions on the Rambam? Fascinating. I really encourage you to take a look at it again, take a look at the full text inside. So the Ramban wrote viewed the Rambam in very high regard. However, he also argued with him in many cases, but it was a very respectful argument. And the Ramban wrote a whole book arguing on the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvot. And he disagreed, he agreed with most, but he disagreed with a number of key mitzvot, the way the Rambam described it. And one of them is tefillah. So in the Ramban's, Nachmanides' version of the Sefer HaMitzvot, or his commentary on the Rambam, he says, Ve'ein haskama b'zeh, source 11, not everyone agrees with the Rambam that davening is a biblical commandment. He quotes many sources, Shekvar Amr Chachamim, Tefillah Derabbanan, it's rabbinic, and he quotes a proof that it's, what about in a case of doubt, you don't have to repeat it. The Rambam would probably say, well, that's talking about maybe that specific tefillah, but as long as you daven once a day, you're fine. So I don't want to get into all the proofs back and forth right now, but he says in the fourth line, Elavada kolin yana tefillah ena chova. He doesn't, the Ramban says it's not an obligation to daven, but rather what is davening? Davening is a chesed that Hashem does for us. Mimidat hachesed that Hashem shomeya v'one b'chol kareinu. It's not something we have to do, it's something that we can do at any time. Which is a fascinating difference of a way of looking at davening. We always think it's something we have to do. No, it's an opportunity, right? It's something, it's a gift that we have, that we're able to open a siddur and daven to Hashem. However, he says, and what about the verses that the Rambam quotes? He says, those could be just nasmachta, those could be just a rabbinic, like an allusion, but not that it's actually a hard and fast biblical source. Olomar, and this is the underlined part, Shemichlal ha'avoda shenilma taroto v'nitpalal eila be'eit hatzarot. He says, even if I want to concede to the Rambam that there is some element of biblical prayer that's mandated, what is that? That's limited to times of distress. This reminds you of what we were talking about at the very beginning, right? Times of distress, times of need. The Ramban says, it's a mitzvah. I'll agree, perhaps it's a mitzvah, but only in the times of distress. And he goes on to elaborate on that. Mitzvah le'et hatzarot. That we should daven and believe that Hashem is going to listen to us. So, let's take a look at... there's two things we have to do now in 50 minutes we have left. We have to wrap up this issue of women's obligation in prayer, and then I want to get to the contemporary aspect of tefillah in general. So we have a debate we saw in the Gemara, Rashi, Tosfot, is tefillah biblical or not? And the debate hinges on how you read that text, right? Do you say pshita, in which case it's biblical? The Gemara is saying it's biblical, or do you just have derachamei ninhu, which is like the Rashi and the Ramban, that it's only rabbinic, and that's why the Gemara doesn't say pshita. So you have this whole debate that goes back to those few words that were a little hard to understand, and has these very strong implications about whether or not prayer is rabbinic or whether it's biblical.
That's but, for women or everybody?
So, for everybody. But yet... Remember we said in the beginning, but yet it seems clear that everyone agrees women are obligated, just the question is why? Is it because of this way or that way? But in the end of the day, women are still obligated. So what's the difference? Why does all this matter? And I want you to come out of here feeling like you learned something, so why does this matter? So let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. Shulchan Aruch says, let's get like practical now. Shulchan Aruch says, Kol ha'ptur mikriyat shema ptur mitfilah mitfilah, second line, v'nashim v'avadim, alpha pishim ptur mikriyat shema, even though women are exempt from kriyat shema, as we said, because it's specifically time-bound, biblical, positive mitzvah, chayavim mitfilah, women are obligated in davening, p'nei shi mitzvah, say shalo hazman grama. Shulchan Aruch is no surprise, going with the Rambam, as he does in 99% of the cases. He was a student of the Rambam school of thought, and almost always goes with the Rambam. Let's take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, though. This is where we're going to get practical. It's a lot of text here, but I'll explain it all. It's a Sifkat and Dalit. Kol zel adat ha-Rambam. Everything the Shulchan Aruch says is all according to the Rambam. Sherak zmane ha-tfilah he-medivrei sofrim. That the times of davening is rabbinic. But ikar mitzvah tfilah, but the basic obligation to daven is min ha-Torah. Shneim olav do b'chol avavchem. Ezei v'adah shebelev. Havi yomizu tfilah. And if you're mitpalal pam achat bayom uvalayla, if you just daven once, day or night, once a day, your yotzeh, your obligation from the Torah. The katav hamagen Avraham. Here we go. This is where it gets very interesting. Shal pis varazu, according to this line of reasoning, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, the Tosfot, nagurov hanashim, most women. In the time of the Magen Avraham, a few hundred years ago, most women had the custom, she'emet palin yudchet bitmidut, they don't daven Shmon Esrei every day, Shachrit Ve'erev. They don't daven morning and night Shmon Esrei. Why? Lefish Omrot Miad Baboker, because when they wake up in the morning, they say, Samach L'Netil, after they've washed their hands, they say, Ezo Bakasha. They say, they utter a request, whatever that request may be. Umin HaTorah Yotzot Bezeh. And biblically, they fulfill their biblical obligation with that request? According to the Rambam? Sure. It doesn't have to be a text, doesn't have to be a time, doesn't have to be a certain content. And it could be they're not obligated any more than that. So what he's saying, Amagen Avram, is that if you say, this is fascinating, if you say that the Gemara is talking about the biblical, this is the Tosfot view, the Rif, the Rambam, if you say that the Gemara is talking about the biblical obligation, what's it saying? Women are obligated in tefillah, shita, of course, it's mangrama, and then you would have thought that, it is mangrama, and they're not obligated. No, kamashalon, they are obligated. In what are they obligated? They're obligated, perhaps, according to this, they're obligated in only the biblical level. If the Gemara is talking about the biblical, then it's saying they're obligated only in the biblical level. It's never speaking about the rabbinic aspect of davening. It's only speaking about the biblical. So it's saying women are obligated in the biblical. We don't know what it says about rabbinic. So we can't assume anything. So what does that mean to say women are obligated in the biblical? According to the Rambam, biblical obligation of davening is to daven once a day. In any language you want, at any time you want, in any way you want. Well, except for those few things, right? You have to face the mikdash. So it's sort of, if you have the stricter view of the mitzvah, of it being d'oraita, that leads you off with a more lenient outcome for women's obligation. Fascinating. In some way, meaning women are still obligated on a biblical level, but in terms of what they actually have to do during the day, there isn't that much. There are not that many things. They don't have to go to shul 3 times a day. They have to daven in their own way, driving in the car, waiting for the bus, waiting in line, I don't know, whatever it is. You know, I always used to see on my way to work, you know, I was in New York, I used to pass by a certain bus stop, and there was girls davening, you know, waiting by the bus. But, you know, wherever you are, you're yotze. You're obligated in a way it's a higher level, but in a way it demands somewhat less of you on the details. It doesn't mean you can't, it just means you don't have to. That's the Magen Avram's perspective. What do you mean?
Women, he says, because it's the nature of women that when you get up in the morning, you're.
He was saying, trying to understand that minhag in his time, in his town, why is it that most of our women don't daven? And these, by the way, it's fascinating. The Rishonim and Achronim had a very strong respect for minhag. If the Jewish community was doing something a certain way, it must be it's rooted in something. They're not just, you know, going against the Torah. So if these women are Nashim Tzidkaniyot, they're not davening Shmon Esrei, they're not going to shul for Shachar and Mincha, well, forget shul, they're not davening Shachar and Mincha, you know, it must be that they have something to base it on, he says. And he goes, it must be that this is what they do. But, Ladat HaRamban, let's see if actually you guys can figure this out now. So what would we say according to, before we read inside, what would we say according to the Ramban? So that if we say that the mitzvah of tefillah is only rabbinic, so the Gemara can't be talking about biblical because there is no biblical, right? It must be only rabbinic, and that's Rashi, right? That's that line of reading the Gemara. So if the Gemara is talking about the rabbinic aspect of davening, what's it saying? Women are obligated in what? They're obligated in the rabbinic aspect of davening, which is davening as we know it. Shacharis, Mincha, Shmon Esrei, everything that comes along with it. So women are going to be obligated in more things, according to that perspective. So let's see. Aval dat haRamban, she'ik our mitzvah tefillah midivrei sofrim. We're in 2 lines from the end of the page, on page 3. That mitzvah davening is midivrei sofrim, she'heim achi knes ha'gdola, she'tikni yudchet parachot, ala se'i delit palotan, shachrit mincha, chova, and arvit becomes optional, reshut, ve'afal pishu mitzvah rasei, midivrei sofrim, she'azman grama, even on a rabbinic level, most of the time, like Kiddush Lavana, if it's time bound, women are still exempt. Why? So he's saying, according to the Ramban, women are obligated in Shachris, Mincha, Maariv, no, because Maariv is Rishus. Maariv is separate sugya and brachot, where the Gemara says Maariv is only, you said karbanot, right? There were two main sacrifices during the day. Maariv is keneged the extra parts of the animals that were brought at night. Men over time took it upon themselves to say that as an obligation. Women never accepted that, so for women it's still completely a reshut. But Shachrit and Mincha are obligatory, midrabanan. To say the text of the Shemoneh Esrei is obligatory, these things are obligatory. And that's what the Gemara, if we go all the way back to the beginning, that's what the Gemara is saying. Chayavot, chayavin bitfilah, derachamei ninu. Women are obligated in davening. That's what the rabbis instituted. When they instituted all the rules of davening, they included women, because women also need to ask for mercy the same way men do. So women's obligation is much more extensive now. Al-Kain says the Mishnah Berurah, fourth line, Yesh lahazir lanashim, we have to remind women, sheit palalu yudchet, that they should daven Shemoneh Esrei. V'nachon gam kein sheikabu aleim al-machut shamayim, and they should accept upon themselves the yoke of heaven, meaning Kriyat Shema, al-kpon Shema Yisrael, etc. V'yomar gam kein bechad emetz v'yatziv, kidei lusmachul letfila, etc. V'chol zel linyat shachur demincha, v'altfilat arvit, v'shut, you don't have to. Okay. Adkan, pause. For the issue of women and davening. So it's a fascinating thing. Let's summarize. We start off with the Mishnah, women are obligated in davening, the Gemara, different ways to read it, a little confusing, not really sure why it matters. All of a sudden, really, out of that comes an entire debate about whether or not davening is biblical or rabbinic. Still not sure why that matters for women, but now we realize whether or not it's biblical or rabbinic depends on how you read it. And when it says they're obligated, in what are they obligated? Are they obligated in the biblical mitzvah? Are they only? Or are they obligated in the rabbinic mitzvah? And depending on which one you read into the Gemara, that will have very practical ramifications as to the extent of women's obligation in davening. According to the Rambam, women would be obligated, like the Magen Avraham, just to say their own personal tefillah once a day. According to the Ramban and Mishnah Berurah, who recommends this approach, who says that most of the poskim, it is actually more the formalities of davening as well, because it's the rabbinic. Now, how does this take us? And any questions on that before we go to the last point?
I have a question.
Yeah?
Is the psak different for Sephardim and Ashkenazim?
So that's a great question. You know, the Mishnah Berurah is pretty much an Ashkenazi posek.
Yeah, but the Rambam is mass.
Correct. Right, so that's what I'm saying. So, right. So, I don't know the answer off the top of my head. What the, you know, clearly, if the Sephardi poskim are following, the Shulchan Aruch says pretty clearly, right? Like the Rambam.
So that would be the single bakasha.
Right. You know, but consult your local Orthodox rabbi, Sephardic rabbi, and Ashkenazi rabbi for that matter. You know, this is just a shiur to learn. This is presenting different opinions. Not a posek. Thankfully, it's one responsibility. I don't have to worry about it. Like I said, the Mishnah Berurah is presenting it as Rov poskim, and the question is that Rov Ashkenazic poskim or not? Okay. So let's go back to our topic. So I want to introduce something, and I'll skip over source 14. It's similar to actually source 15. And this, I took it. I don't have a scanner at home, so I took it with my phone, so it's like a little wavy. This is from this book. It's such a great book. It's called Majesty and Humility. I really recommend it. It's The Thought of Rabbi Soloveitchik, and it's written by Reuven Ziegler. It's really phenomenal. He takes you through a lot of the writings of the Rav and sort of explains them in a little more plain English. And he says as follows. The debate between the Rambam and the Ramban. So remember, we saw those debate about is prayer rabbinic or is it biblical? And then the Ramban conceded. He says even if you want to say it could be biblical. It's only in the time of distress. So let's take a look at what the Rav has to say on that. So in a different essay, the Rav offers an intriguing explanation of the dispute between Rambam and Ramban. Both, he says, acknowledge that the Torah mandates prayer when the individual or community encounters Eitzerah. Jewish prayer stems from the twin feelings of crisis, this is an important line, and man's total dependence on God. That's what Jewish prayer stems from. A lot of other sources of this. The Gemara will say, when one stands to daven, one should daven ani bepetach, like a pauper in the doorway. Like, you know, literally with the hands out, I have nothing, I have nothing to eat, you know, I need a dollar, I need a quarter, you know, total dependence on God. That is the essence of davening. Out of the straits, min hametzer, I've called upon you, mimamakim, etc. I'm skipping down to after that parentheses of Psalm 123. Yet these two authorities differ on the question of what kind of tzara engenders prayer. What kind of hardship motivates prayer? Ramban believes that etzara refers to external, obvious, surface crises, such as war, famine, or disease. These occur only occasionally, and therefore the Torah does not require daily prayer, but only during the time of tzara. Rambam, however, believes that man is perpetually in crisis. This is the, you know, for those of you who are students of the Rav, this fits with the Rav's perspective. For Eitzara refers to the inner, I'm like four lines from the end of the paragraph, to the inner existential depth crisis that stems from an awareness of man's constantly looming defeat. And the key word here, due to his human limitations, frailties, and finitude. So, it's a great, like, brisker, you know, understanding, but it also has really powerful ramifications. It's saying, they all agree, both the Rambam and Ravan agree, that tefillah is motivated by etzara, motivated by a feeling of dependence on God, of crisis. Ramban, however, says it's referring to more the external crisis, and when it's a war, chas v'shalom, like there is now in Israel, when it's, you know, times of, unusual times of that, that's when you have to daven. The Rambam says, wait, no, the daven mitzvah is every day. So how could that be etzara? The Rav says, no, every day a person has to realize that they're in this perpetual crisis, existential inner crisis, that due to their human limitations. And I think going back to our what we talked about in the beginning as to why is it so difficult, and I think particularly in our generation, to connect with tefillah, and this is sort of, I'm taking it on a limb, this is my opinion, is, you know, not necessarily that it was ever easy to daven, and there's many sources that indicate how davening is always a challenge, but in our modern era, we're so far into the extreme of the spectrum of taking the perspective of conquering, you know, the world of the Rav would call majesty, dignity, dominating, even just the fact that we have so much power in a small little device in our pockets that we could find the news, you know, minute to minute, what's going on everywhere. We can send emails, I can manage my bank account, you know, I could control so much that we're not, it's hard for us on a day-to-day basis to be in touch with our limitations, with the humility, with the, you know, aspect of the this existential crisis. It's not something that we're in touch with on a daily basis. The world, the modern world, the Western modern world that we're living in is such that this is hard for us. We thank God have so much. We don't need that. We don't want for so much. We have, thank God, plenty of food. We have our relative security. Okay, moments of lack of security, but you know, when you compare it to life in the pogroms or in other times in Jewish history, you know, how could you compare our lives now to then? So it's understandable that it's hard for us, you know, because the only true tefillah, and that's even with the, at the end of the day, they all agree, right? Whether Ramban and even the Rambam, according to the Rav Soloveitchik and the Rav Soloveitchik's brother of Aaron Soloveitchik, in source 14 says the same thing independently of his brother, that the only way we could truly connect is if we have that real need, as a number of you said in the beginning, we really need something. Someone's really sick, someone's ill, or we have a child who needs something, or whatever it might be, or a time of intense gratitude, which is the flip side, right? You're appreciating, wow, I need, you know, Hashem, you gave me something, I don't deserve it, you know, thank you so much. You know, and I think this gives us an insight into really what tefillah is about, and there's a lot more to say about tefillah, but I think if we could say one thing, I think this is really the kernel of really what tefillah is about. It's this idea of this feeling a sense of human limitation, a sense of Christ, a sense of needing God. And only then could the tefillah really be effective. There are a number of stories in the Gemara how people were davening, and just in Daf Yomi, they were davening for rain, and no rain came, and then they like gave up because they realized, you know, and they were depressed about it. They realized, you know, there's nothing more they could do, and that's when the rain came. Meaning it's sometimes, even in the davening itself, if we feel we have too much control over it, that itself is sort of an oxymoron. And the whole idea of the davening is the feeling that really we're helpless. Really deep down, and it's very hard for us to feel that way based on the way we live our lives. But we have to, if we want to get in touch with tefillah, that's the way to do it, to get to that point where we feel that moment that we could feel really we're helpless, really we control nothing. Really everything is in Hashem's control. And that's just the essence of tefillah. And that's really the Rambam's, according to the Rav, the Rambam's daily obligation, because we have to feel that every day. And that's perhaps understanding his debate of the Ramban. So just to summarize, we saw here the Gemara, the Mishnah talks in Brachot, women's obligation in prayer, two different perspectives. Is prayer rabbinic or biblical? Depending on how you read the Gemara, is the Gemara obligating women in biblical prayer only or in also rabbinic prayer? Application, does that mean you have to daven Shacharis and Mincha and Shmoneh Esrei or just a simple Bakasha? And as well as the application of what is really prayer about, it, and understanding that it really has to come from a moment of crisis, and that we don't have to wait for an external crisis, but that we could find, and hopefully the challenge for us is to look for in our daily lives, that really, no matter what we're doing on the outside, really deep down, we live in a constant state of human limitations and human crisis, and we really need Hashem all the time. And the more we can understand that and feel that, the more we can connect with tefillah. So, shakach for participating. Everyone have a great rest of the day.